Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode, so click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by Sendit Philippines. Sendit is the leading payment gateway in the Philippines. Allow your business to accept payments seamlessly from cards, e-wallets, retail outlets, and local banks. For more information, visit sendit.co. Also powered by PDAX. PDAX is a homegrown cryptocurrency exchange that offers the best rates among local cryptocurrency exchanges. Download the PDAX app now on the Google Play Store, App Store, or Huawei App Gallery. Start trading Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other cryptocurrencies for as low as 50 pesos by signing up on podlink.co/hustleshare-pdax. Also by Podmetrics, the easiest way to monetize your podcast. Sign up now at podmetrics.co for free and use the code HustleShare.
It's not just the work of one person, but it's the work of many people. It's the work of an entire organization. So one side fails, it's very easy not to succeed. And we had to make sure that everybody was on the same page and we had the same mindset. And it worked for us.
Welcome to Hustle Share, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here is your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Hustle Share Podcast. We are with a GM of one of the biggest companies in the Philippines. Again, internationally, actually. But I love this product because I use their platform and their tech to print out a lot of papers back when I was still running Chatbot VH, because we used to print a lot of papers there, right? The pre-pandemic. And again, I love that it saved me from a lot of standing up, because Epson always has the best technology, especially the Wi-Fi Bluetooth campaign. I don't have to like plug in my computer to print a lot of papers, and that saved me a lot of back aches of trying to come up and down just to print papers. But before I get carried away, I need to welcome the GM of Epson in the Philippines. Let's welcome to the show Mr. Ed Bonoan of Epson Philippines.
Hello, hello. Good
thank to you. Thank you, Ed. Again, Ed, thanks very much. And I want to give you the best intro, but the best intro should come from you, because I had to ask you the $1 million question. Ed, what's your hustle?
Well, right now, my hustle right now is that I'm the head of marketing for Epson Philippines Corporation. And what's inside marketing, you say, it's such a general thing, no? Actually, it's a very all-encompassing position. Mm-hmm. I handle things like the product management, no? And then I have also something to do with distributor management as well, mm-hmm. customer service, supply chain management, and also the marketing communication also of the company.
Wow.
So it's quite an all-encompassing thing, marketing.
All right. And that's a full, holistic hustle right there that you need. You can't be a one-trick pony in order to, you know, thrive in this position. You've been in this role for a while now, but I want to understand, Ed, before you even started all of that, with Epson, I want to understand the structure. Epson Philippines Corporation. I mean, I've been seeing this since I was a kid, right? You see this around, you know, when you go to the cyber zones or wherever, right? But I want to understand the etymology before we ride our hardware as well here, called the Hustle Share Time Machine. What's the structure of Epson Philippines here? Because again, big conglomerates that are multinational here are, again, there's a lot, but each of them has different structures. How does Epson Philippines operate in the grand scheme of things?
Well, Epson Philippines Corporation, EPC in short, we are a sales and marketing company that handles Epson sales nationwide for the Philippines. Now, so the way we're structured here, right, so we have a country manager who is Japanese, and then underneath him, we have some general managers, one of them, myself, you know, taking care of the marketing side. We also have one for the sales side. We also have another person handling the corporate services division or the back office side, you know, accounting, wow. HR, so forth.
And I can just imagine the type of, you know, efficiency, the years and years that you've built into this. But before I get carried away, I need you to buckle up, Ed, because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share Time Machine. All right, buckle up. Sometimes it gets bumpy. Turbulent. And we're going intergalactic. All right. So I want to understand now, Epson is what your current hustle is, and you've been around for a while here now, 13 years and counting, right? But I want to understand, how were you raised? Because a lot of people who've been in this podcast, again, common denominator, and it might sound like Groundhog Day a little bit, is that we all had a chip in our shoulder. We all had either massive influences or massive desire to succeed, because you experience not so easy life back then, or a mixture of both, or whatnot. But what was that like growing up for you? And did you even imagine that you're going to be leading this multinational company here in the Philippines?
It's a dream. No, it was a dream. My father was an executive in several companies, and he did quite a bit. No, and I guess at that point in time, he was known as a manager, no? And he did quite a bit for the companies that he was with, so much so that that when he passed away, he was already at the cusp of his career. Unfortunately, he passed away quite young. No? So, but I think that was what set my sights. And as you said, no, a chip on your shoulder, it was a big set of shoes for me to fill. This is something that I think I set my sights on at the beginning of my career.
That's how it
began. Yeah.
Okay, so Ed, you mentioned already what growing up was like, but what were your first hustles that you had to take? You know, and again, what was the initial experiences that you had and the mindset you had coming out of school?
I think one of the things that influenced me a lot was the fact when I graduated back in the 80s, one of the one of the things that happened to me was I was able to get to work abroad as a trainee.
Oh, wow.
Through one of the student organizations.
Where?
Back then. ISEC, if you
ISEC, yes.
So I was fortunate enough to have been thrown over to the U.S. No?
Wow.
I was assigned to an automotive manufacturing company.
Okay.
I was there only for like a summer.
Detroit? But
no. Okay. In Connecticut.
Okay. All right. East Coast. All right.
Right. And then right after that, I was also able to get a traineeship this time with IBM in New York.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So that I was able to spend a year there. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, I got transferred over to Tokyo. Still the same thing, IBM.
Wow.
So that was a big influence in me. I think it changed my outlook a whole lot because it opened me up to a whole dimension of different personalities and different cultures. You know? So in other words, it taught me that the way we're used to doing things here in the Philippines is not the only way.
Correct.
And there are different points of views and different starting points that people would pick when taking when looking at the same box, for example. Now, they would
Correct.
Be looking at the same box, but probably from a different angle. And that helped me to realize that there seems to be more than one way than looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
Realizing that already opens up a whole lot of opportunities for you, because if you are only stuck at looking things one way, innovation or opening your mind to doing things will probably be a little bit difficult. No? Of course, you know, I may be generalizing, but for me, that's my point of view. I think it was a blessing for me to have been able to have that kind of experience, something that not very many people have been able to go through. So I'm quite blessed with that one.
That's amazing, because at the end of the day, again, what I've had also here in the podcast for a lot of times is, you know, there's something about going out of your comfort zone and, you know, working abroad that teaches you about perspective.
Yeah.
And this is also very evident in the startup ecosystem, right? And I always say it, at least in general, I'll just segue a little bit. In the startup ecosystem, there's three types of founders in the Philippines that you can time. So obviously, the first one is the expats. They come in with a lot of macros, a lot of, you know, things that not a lot of locals understand, but they understand the macros. But they're not that good with the micros, the nuances that they see. The polar opposite of that is the grassroots type of founder, where they come in and they only understand the problem from their backyard and they only see things in one lens. Whereas there's a hybrid in between, where the local founder or the repatriates who understand the nuances, but also have seen the other perspective of working abroad could be. Now, here's what's impressive about the type of founders, and I think you had a similar experience, is that you chose to come back, whereas a lot of people also just choose they call it the brain drain. But when you came back, what was the different perspective that you now see in how you operate, and how did you see the next opportunities that came your way?
Well, maybe even before that, just to reiterate what I was saying about taking a look at things in different ways.
Yeah.
I also wanted to say that coming in from the US and then being able to work in Japan was actually, and still for the same company, no? It was actually a big eye-opener, because you couldn't find any two sets of cultures that were really opposite each other.
No? Absolutely.
One being Japanese culture, the other one being the American culture. Mm-hmm. And so I put it as maybe the Philippines, we are somewhere in between, whereas the Japanese have a very different mindset, and the Americans are very freewheeling regards to their own mindset. We are somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Japanese cannot say no directly, or they can, depending on your point of view. the Americans can, you know, easily blurt out. Yeah, very straightforward. We are somewhere in between. And so, moving on to your question about, you know, where this brings me. Why did I come back? That was your question. So it was really both a practical thing and an idealistic situation at the same time. On one hand, I came back actually because my father had just passed away at that point in time. Yeah. And me being the eldest, of course, I felt that it was my responsibility to come over and help out and lead the family. So that's what brought me in. But at the same time also, I think that it was also an eye-opener at the same time. The Philippines should be a place also of opportunity, you know, for people with my background or with my work experience. There could be quite a number of opportunities here. And that's where I thought that maybe I should be here. Yeah.
Got it. So what's the next opportunity? When you came back, again, new set of eyes, the Eastern and Western approach to seeing things, so two different lenses. And again, if we're somewhere in between, what is the next opportunity that you came in here? Because you were country manager of this one for a while.
Yeah, well, you know, when I came back, you know, I guess one of the things that I wanted to get into really was marketing. Marketing, and so in fact, one of the first jobs I got into when I did get back was I worked for a fast food chain.
Oh wow!
Marketing in a fast food chain. So I don't know. I wanted to check it out and see how that came in. You know? And after that, I went and took my MBA at the AIM.
Wow.
I guess it further cemented my wanting to be in IT, because at that time, especially, you know, when you said IT, information technology, computers was a big thing.
Yep.
And everybody wanted to be into computers at that point in time. So that's where I went. You know? So both being into computers, the computing, and being in the marketing aspect, I thought that was quite fascinating. And so after AIM, believe it or not, the first job I got after that was going into a software house, and they were getting me ready to become a software analyst. So meaning I was supposed to be the in-between between the end users that had computing needs and the programmers that would actually create programs based on the end users' computing wants and needs. So I was supposed to be the bridge between that. And that was quite fascinating, because it forced you to communicate and think in a certain way. Be very methodical in the way you talk to your end users, getting to bring out their needs and wants. And at the same time, also being able to think like a programmer, such that you would really have to translate what the end user wants for the programmers, because the programmers also have their own way of thinking, right? I mean, you know, they think
they're problem solvers by default.
Problem solvers by default. At the same time, they think very methodically. They think very methodically and so very logically. And so there's really a gap between the two, and it's your job to bridge those two. But then, you know, after a while, one of the things that came up totally unexpected was I was recruited. I went into another software company. This time it was from a software house doing custom software. I moved into another type of software house. And at this time, the software house was a packaged software house. It was into enterprise software. So at that time, it was mainframe software. So very, very different. And here's the thing. Here's the rub on that. I didn't come in as marketing, but I came in as sales.
Oh.
So I became a salesperson, and this is one of those times when, you know, I had to
hustle.
I had to ask myself and say, you know, is this something that I would like to get into? At that point, my understanding of sales, I guess, was overly simple. Overly simple, meaning, you know, these are the people who I always equated sales for some reason. I always equated sales for both car, used car salesmen, either that or, you know, department store salesman.
You're a Walmart guy.
Yeah,
right?
You're a Walmart guy, or, you know, so I obviously I was very ill informed.
Right.
But it, again, it was a big leap into something very new. So at that time, I told my wife, hey, I'm getting into something very different from what I'm used to. So it looks like I'm going to be mixing with a different group of people, and I'm going to be doing something very different from where I am right now. And it probably is going to change my work life and probably the lifestyle as well. You know? So that means that I would be, I expected to be hobnobbing and talking to not only programmers, but going up the ladder of all of these enterprises, going all the way up to the C level, you know, the CIOs, the CFOs, even the CEOs, because of the large investment that enterprise software brought and brings. And so it's not something that your regular purchasing person would be able to get a handle on, no? Nor would he have the power really to say that, you know, this multi-million peso investment is something that would benefit the company. That needs more decision making, more C-level involvement, and that was the expectation. So I stayed there for quite some time. This software company for a while, in fact, was even larger than Microsoft. It was larger than Microsoft at its early stages. Right. And then, you know, Microsoft being the juggernaut it was then and still is, no, it really went leaps and bounds. But even before that time, this company I was working for, the software house I was working for, I was actually larger than Microsoft itself. So that's where I was, no? And it was interesting because it really made me, it gave me a whole perspective, and it gave me a whole new way of thinking, maybe templatized to a certain degree, because I would go to different companies. No? My customers were actually mainframe shops.
Yeah.
Mainframe shops, and then larger mid-range shops. So I would know all of the. I would know their architecture. I would know what was inside their suite of hardware and software. What were they doing? What were the enterprise software that they were using? How it would affect the business, so on and so forth. And it gave me a very interesting perspective as to what was going on, because it told me what it almost would tell you. I mean, these are the software, and what they were doing inside the computers was something like the inner workings of what the business was. And it would give me the insight as to what the company or what the banks were doing, you know? And where they were headed at the same time. So a lot of interesting things to look at and compare, because selling software is not something like you do over the counter. It's not like fast moving goods, right? Consumer goods that, you know, you just take a second to think about, and you put it in your shopping cart, and you move on. You buy it. For this kind of sales to happen, it takes a lot of visits. It takes a lot of months, sometimes even years, for you to be able to sell this kind of software to the companies. And in the process, you really have to, you know, roll your sleeves up and get into the business of these companies and understand why they need the software. Is it something that they will really help, that will really help them? Maybe it might also be that it's a threat to some others within the company, you know, aside from being a godsend. So it was really interesting. It was really interesting. And you'd meet a whole, I mean, the good thing, great thing about sales is that you meet a whole range of personalities.
Absolutely. It's network building. And again, you also discover a lot of those things. But before we take our first break, I want to understand. So again, for right now, obviously the set of lens that you use is from a massive point of view because it's marketing driven. But in sales and marketing, I mean, coming from a startup founder, where the commonality that I see always, because I've also done marketing and sales, but for my own startup. But at the end of the day, it's a matter of persuasion. The only difference is how you persuade it and the channel that you actually do to get that done.
Oh, but, gosh, don't get me started about that. I have a whole massive, a lot of things to say about exactly what you were saying. So anyway, right. As you were
but
saying.
What's the 2-cent version about the similarity of sales and marketing, how persuasion is the whole core of this thing?
Actually, you know, for me, it's all about educating your market. It's all about educating your market. You know, the best, I've been through companies already. I've been through companies that have great products. However, as you put it in your words, the persuasion was not there because there was a lot of hard selling and there was no differentiating, or there was no, they didn't spend enough time telling the market exactly what made their product the best.
Yeah.
Right? So it was all about education of the market. And I think that's one of the biggest learnings that I had over the years, through the years. And it's something that, it's something that I've experienced because I've been into IT for quite some time, ever since the 80s, on the sales and marketing side. And I've been through the different kinds of IT companies, all the way from, from software, from customized software to packaged software. And then I even went into system integration. I've been into e-commerce as well. And then at the end of everything, hardware. So I was with a server company, one of the at that point in time, one of the big three or four at that point, because it's the industry consolidated, right? So quite a number of these companies just disappeared or were eaten up by the bigger hardware companies. Uh-huh. So I was with one of these bigger server software companies. And then finally, after all of that, then I landed up here in Epsom, which is on the peripherals naman, the peripherals side of the IT world. So I've been through it all, apparently.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I've had an interesting journey.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now let's take our first break, and when we come back, let's now talk about your hustle in Epson, and it's a deep dive, especially in how you grow it. Well, let's talk about that more after the break. And we're back from the break. We are still with Ed Bonoan again, who's told us how, again, persuasion is the key. And especially if you're a startup and you're listening to this, you can learn a lot. Because again, at the end of the day, whether it's a user or a paying customer, you need to educate, and you know, repetition is also key, because some people just might not get it in first try. So you have to have the stamina to keep singing the same song, but from different angles, not the same thing. It's so repetitive, in order for when the inflection point happens, you'd be the first one to get it. But the inflection point has happened so many times already for Epson itself. And you've evolved towards the years. But when you came in here, at April 2008, How has the evolution of Epson, from your point of view, changed? Because again, 2008 to 2021, a lot of things have happened and a lot of advances have happened as well.
Such an interesting story, Ron. Epson at that point in time was known pretty much, we were competing more in the retail market. Maybe, I don't know if your audience knows, but Epson actually has quite a, has a very large portfolio of products, not only in inkjet consumer, okay, not just the ones that you can buy from your IT shop for your regular printers or your printing needs at home, but we also have things like large format printers, CAD printers, you know, all of these ads in the magazines. Okay. These all first go through our large format printers when it comes to proofing. So, you know, Epson has a lot of experience in that. So anyway, we also have things like dot matrix, you know, your classic dot matrix machines, right? So we all know about that. But how were we then when we first came in? We were very much really, I think we were very much a follower. I believe a follower at that time in the Philippine market, because we were really following what the others were doing. When they brought out promos, we were trying to imitate their promos. We were trying to do bundlings and all of these crazy consumer promos that you're familiar with. Huh? However, I believe it there was a limited output. There was a limited success. The competitors at that time were four, and we're four at least in the printing industry.
Right.
That you know.
Yeah.
The top three, we were number three. We were quite close to each other. Maybe we were our market share was in the 20s, and then the others were in the 30s, low 30s. So
yeah,
very close to each other. Okay. And it really looked like we were just following the leader. So we could never get out into number two. We could never get out into number one.
Okay.
Until finally, you know, we said, when we finally came out, we were the first company to come out with continuous ink printers, the ones with debote yung
No?
Okay, before it was in cartridges. Mm-hmm. Anyway, when we switched over to the bottles, it was an opportunity for us to change.
Right.
And what we did was we went through this massive campaign of educating the market, not just only the retail side, but also the corporate side. You know? And it was all about figuring out how can we get captive audiences and how do we take advantage of captive audiences. So on the retail side, we made sure that our promoters who stayed at the storefront and the dealer salesmen at the storefront knew exactly what our product was, and we trained them. It was really repetition, you know, until, you know, all they could think about is Epson. Same thing also on the corporate side. On the corporate side, we were doing a lot of seminars, which we used to call technology updates, which we still call technology updates. And it was all about, you know, what is Epson? What are our products? How can it benefit you? Why is it different from the other products? Mm-hmm. So that was the main strategy, really. How do we put the name for ourselves? How do we differentiate ourselves? And how do we tell the market that we are different from the competition? How do we educate them? And it came out, it turned out to be a winning strategy, because once we took away things like price, huh? Because if that's what we see, if your market is ignorant about your products, all they will really look at is price.
Correct.
Right. So price really negates. Price negates all the benefits or all your high tech, you know, innovations. If they can't understand that, then all they will look at is price. And at the end of the day, the cheapest, the one with the lowest cost, will win. Right. Correct. So no matter how much features you place in there, price negates everything.
Correct.
So once we were able to communicate that to the market, then we were able to remove price as the number one criteria. Of course, price would always be there as a criteria.
Yeah.
The market would always have a budget, but at least that is moved down the ladder in terms Correct. Of priorities. And yeah. what we found out was we were able to, whereas before, the market was always competing in terms of low end. Who has the cheapest printer yeah. units, for example. This time we were already getting customers that were saying, no, okay, now that I understand, I'm willing to take a leap and, you know, let's not talk about what the price is. What we're looking for is what are the functions that can take my needs on. And we found out that the customers are now willing to pay, actually. If they understand, they're actually willing to shell out the money. And I think this is a very important lesson also for startups, no? Because this is something where you have to really differentiate yourself and ensure that the benefits are actually understood by the market. When the market finds out about that, they'll go head over heels, and right. budget will not be as big an issue. Of course, it will always be that, but it won't play as big an issue if your market was ignorant about what you're selling, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, I think the communication side was something that we excelled in, so much so that for the inkjet market, we were actually able to move from like 20%, mid 20%, which is quite high at that point in time. We actually were able to leapfrog the competition, and now we are for the inkjet ink tank category, we are now at 65%, which is
wow.
We are at 65%, so it's guaranteed that one in every two printers sold in the country is an Epson printer.
That's amazing.
Printer. Yeah, so it's done that, no? And then for the other categories of Epson products, then we were able, using that same strategy, we've been able to leapfrog into number one, or at least being a contender for number one using that strategy.
Wow, yeah. That's incredible. Now, I want to understand, because again, it's already hard to evangelize this on repeat outside. And again, you don't even know. You'll have a little bit of a feeling that, you know, things are now starting to go in your favor, but stamina goes a long way. But more than stamina, how did you get the buy-in of getting the right people who have the right stamina to even do this in repetition? And what are the creative channels that you have to go? Because again, it was a head-to-head battle.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it's a copycat league. If people, your competition saw that, oh wait, Epson's trying to do that too. Maybe it's time for me to do that. So how did you carve out that niche?
You are so right about that. Because we were expecting that, you know, it would be so easy for the competition to copy exactly what we were doing. It's just a matter of holding all of these seminars and, you know, training your people. But apparently it's not as simple as that. It actually goes back down into the organization and how you're organized, what kind of roles and responsibilities your people have.
Yeah.
So for example, let me give an example. Mm-hmm. What we did for all of our promoters in the storefronts mm-hmm. is we trained them to be trainers themselves.
Okay.
So we versus what I understand one of our competitors was doing was that, number one, they outsourced the training. The other one is for another competitor, they only had one trainer in the whole Philippines doing training.
Yeah.
And so it made for a very big advantage for us. So
Correct.
it's all about the organization and how and the roles that you give to your people.
Correct.
And let me say this. This took years. It took
Correct.
Years.
I can imagine.
It was not an overnight thing. There were a lot of mistakes that we made. And we had to go back to the drawing board. So it took many years.
But again, look at that. When you plant that seed and now made everybody an evangelist, and that eventually becomes an multiplier effect rather than putting all your eggs in one person. And if that person decides to leave your organization, you are screwed, right?
No, not necessarily. I think, again, it's not just the work of one person, but it's the work of many people.
Correct.
It's the work of the entire organization. So one side fails. It's very easy not to succeed. So and we had to make sure that everybody was on the same page and we had the same mindset. And it worked for us.
No, again, and that's a testament to how great the culture that you guys built, because that feedback loop from sales to marketing and going, or whoever needs to touch that, that needs to be in sync in order for this whole transformation and this whole mission to come to fruition. Because again, it's a long play. And if there's not enough buy-in from inside, it won't even resonate outside, right? And that's amazing what you guys done. But I also want to understand now, aside from this, you're talking about Epson has been a big advocate for sustainability, because again, you guys have been doing amazing products. Again, I've seen also the culture of respect that you guys had for the environment. I think it's never wavered over time. And I think from what I see is that Epson has sustainability at its core. But let's talk about that. Why this sudden change also in now not just growth? Because sometimes people think it's zero sum, that you have to either grow and not talk about sustainability. But in reality, it shouldn't be that way. How did this change happen in Epson?
Well, you know, we've been very successful in the way we communicate. So I think it was time for us to reach out now. We go beyond what we're used to, just always talking about products. And so we've gone through that already. And so we're reaching further, no? Because sustainability really is something that is very applicable to today, no? It's a relevant issue. It's a relevant issue that companies are, not only Epson, but actually a lot of other companies also are taking a look at, no? If our environment, we don't take care of our environment will eventually not take care of us, and it will be also bad for business. So it's a two-way street, no? The environment and business, we have to make sure that we are able to work with each other, no? So now, here's the thing also. It's not just about your regular sustainability pitch, no? Actually, there's a lot of putting your money where your mouth is. And in fact, Epson actually has been doing this since its founding, since the time it was the time it started, no? So in the 40s, it was the factory was a very small factory in the forests of Nagano prefecture in Japan. And even at that time, you know, they started, you know, they knew that the community was dependent on the environment. And of course, Epson also was very dependent also on the community. So without taking care of the community, without taking care of the environment, then eventually Epson would be shooting itself in the foot. No? Right. So it started off by treating wastewater being discharged from the factory. Polluting there's a lake called Lake Soa. It's a beautiful lake. So just imagine that if Epson didn't take care of wastewater, you know, Lake Soa wouldn't
be. That'd be a cesspool.
Yes, if you go to Japan, that's one of the areas that you should go and take a look at.
Correct.
So this is something that has become the mantra of Epson, and it's advocated globally. It's something about it has a lot also to do with, it's not just only about us and the environment and the community. It's about talking about respect for both sides, right? So it's this respect that we have for both the environment and for the community that, you know, it should be in the conversation, and it's about sustaining this vision, okay? Which is actually the harder part of it all.
Okay? Right. And I can imagine, you know, supervising supply chain and customer service is already a huge task. But when you talk about marketing, and we're ultimately talking about like brand comms, which again, persuasion is the biggest undertone in that. How has communications evolved for Epson in the Philippines, at least during this time?
And so Epson, actually, it was about communicating, like, for example, our corporate vision. We had to re-communicate our vision because we want to make sure that Epson is, we're not only just about printers, but we're about being relevant to society as a whole. So we're coming up with all of these different new technologies. And we have to start off actually by saying that we are relevant and we care for the environment and we can sustain. We can sustain it. So in fact, by 2050, we should be underground resource free, and we should also be carbon negative.
We should be
using less oils and metals, hopefully by that time. Mm-hmm. So I think that's how far Epson looks at into the future.
Yeah, and I think I've even seen you guys collab. I forgot where I saw this, but you partnered with Nat Geo.
Yes, or something. Yes. For Nat Geo, for turn down the heat. Campaign. Now, because again, it's about global warming, and our technologies actually goes very well with anti-global warming, because we choose to be more energy efficient and by using heat-free technologies. So this is something that we have to be able to translate also into the market. How does the communities benefit from this kind of community? And bear in mind that these technologies that Epson promotes are actually all homegrown, all invented by Epson. So it's something that we're very proud about, very, very proud about. And that's why we think that it's really part of our DNA to be pushing and communicating this. So this is exactly what I was telling you about. You know, we have all these great technologies, but if we are not able to communicate this, then, you know, at the end of the day, customers again will take a look at it. At what price, you know, that kind of thing. And we've gone beyond this. No? We've gone beyond this by going and partnering not only with Nat Geo, but in the past we've also partnered up with DENR, the Department of Natural Resources, no, and also the Green Education in Philippines, which is the youth arm. No, so we did things like upcycling seminars and even an eco film. So we rolled in activities to show and to communicate about all of this environment sustainability. No? So it's not only about us doing the hard talking, but it's also about us being involved in others
grassroots,
coming up with their own stories. Right? So I think the final one that we have ongoing right now is with Nat Geo. So the campaign is called Turn Down the Heat. No? And it's supposed to be helping to protect the world's permafrost, which is the frozen earth underneath in the polar regions of the earth, right?
Right.
So I think we all know that permafrost is under a huge
threat. Yep.
And so this is something where we all should be very concerned about.
Right.
And this is
sea levels.
Exactly. This is already for our children, our children's children, you know.
Yep.
So that's what we're looking at. We're taking a look at our own technologies and then equating it with the environment. And we have to make sure that we make good with what we're saying. No? Heat-free technologies, it goes hand in hand with global warming, anti-global warming, and making sure that we are going through a sustainable or at least our technologies are sustainable for the long term.
All right. Now, that's amazing. And let's take our last break. And when we come back, let's talk about paying it forward. You know, what's the MO of how you can actually make it this big, especially in the corporate ladder, just like how Ed did. But let's talk about that more after the break. And we're back from the break. We are still with Ed Bunuan, who again told us all the amazing things that the EPC or Epson Philippines Corporation are doing here. But again, there's so many hats you're wearing. There's so much responsibility that fall under your plate, Ed. But I want to understand, from your point of view, with all these things happening, you know, within your realm of responsibility, what's your day-to-day like, and how do you even manage to make people all in the same page, given the scale of what you're doing?
Yeah, well, okay. I guess let me just, I think I should get into how did I get into all of these roles? Because my start really came from marketing and sales, no? Taking care of customer service and taking care of supply chain management, also doing marketing communication, so on and so forth. No? So I think it's very easy to get caught in the comfort zone. And I think that being stuck in a comfort zone is the way it's stagnant. Believe it or not, one of my first roles that got me out of my comfort zone was handling, let's make it very simple. Okay. Retail sales.
Yep.
So I started off in corporate sales, you know, corporate marketing. But for me, for the life of me, I couldn't figure out retail sales. And so that was one of the first challenges I had, at least within that term. How to get out of my routine, out of my rut, if you depending on where you're looking. But it got me thinking that, you know, I'm not an expert at this. However, the people that I'm going to be managing are actually the experts. I cannot claim to be an expert at anything. And I think anyone with a generalist background will always, I think people have to understand that it's impossible to be experts at everything. And this is where us generalist managers have to realize that, you know, and that's why we have to be able to have good rapport. We have to be able to manage people from different places. We have to understand the overview of everything, but how it fits together. That's a different story. And I think managing all of these different functions, of course, at the beginning of it all, it will all sound like gobbledygook, nonsense. But once you you roll up your sleeves and you get into the daily grind of things, no? Understanding it, you get to understand so much more, no? But of course, I think one of the things that you have to realize is that you're also not trying to steal away the thunder, okay, you're not trying to steal the thunder from your people. At the end of everything, they're the ones doing the heavy lifting. And you have to be able to put them also on that pedestal to make them feel good about themselves. But it's your responsibility to understand exactly what they're doing and how you can empower them to make the right decisions and do things correctly in the direction that you want them to.
Nice.
So, for example, now I'm handling customer service, for example. I think it's something that's way different from my training. You know? So now I have engineers that are under me, technical people that do in our customer service. We both have pre-sales and post-sales technical people. And it's about understanding how they work and what makes them tick and what motivates them. And also being able to hear what they have to say, because they're actually the experts. They're the ones that know the business. And you have to be able to get their inputs because they're also the people at the ground. They're the guys that are talking to the dealers, salesmen, the end users, okay? This is still your market. So they have a wealth of knowledge that you yourself can learn from. And you won't have the same kind of feel for the market in the same way that these people do, because they come in daily contact with the market every single day of their career. So in essence, they are the experts. Now, your job as the manager is how do you tie all of these people together? How do you get and cultivate all of their ideas and put it into a winning formula and strategy? That's your responsibility, at least as a manager. No? So that's I think one is getting out of your comfort zone is important already. Don't worry about being the expert, because you will never be the expert against somebody that has been doing his job, doing a specialist job for the past 10 years or 15 years, 20 years. There's no way that you're gonna surpass. I think one of the things that in one of the roles that I had when I came into a department and to these people, I told them, I am not an expert. I was quite upfront with them. And I said, I am not the expert here. You guys are. However, my value add to you in this department is I will put together a framework by which we will work. We will get your ideas to work. We will make it more we'll put more of a methodology in it. We'll put more of a logic into what you're doing. Okay. And by doing this, by arranging things into this manner, putting this managerial style together, then we will be able to work with each other. You having the practical knowledge, me having more of the organizational managerial expertise. We put that together, and I think we will have a decent combination. And so that's how we did it, and that's the kind of mindset that I try to put into in each of the different functional areas that should be quote unquote quite daunting for me. So that's where I'm coming from.
All right, sounds good. Now, before I let you go, if you have an advice to your old self, what would you tell the young Ed that was just, coming back from Japan and, from the States? I'm pretty sure there's a lot of other things that you know now, hindsight being 2020. But what would be your advice to your old self, knowing all these things that you know now?
That's a very good question. I've never really thought about that one. But knowing what I know today, it's still about being open-minded. It's still about, trying to accept challenges as they come. The challenges that may be thrown to you may not be the ones that you want, but because they are in front of you, go ahead and grab them and try and solve the problems. You may not be the expert, but there are people around you that can help you.
That's the advantage of that. Thank you very much, Ed, for again such an amazing episode. But before I let you go, I need to know, what's the future that you envision for Epson Philippines? And if they want to reach out to you and work with you or whatever, where do they go and how do they do that?
For the future, we always look at Epson, especially now. I mean, I think one of the things that we didn't say about Epson is that Epson has a great portfolio of technology and products coming out. So we used to be known for printers, but we have things like robots, different kinds of printers, label printers, projectors, so on and so forth. So with all of this, technology. What we want to be able to do is we want to be able to be a company that is relevant, you know? Relevant not only in the past, but moving forward. So we will continue to have all of these technologies that we will invent and that we will package into different products. So this we hope also with the kind of selling style, marketing style that we've been able to develop over the years. We hope also that we will be able to get all of these products and we will be able to conquer each and every market that we get into. So that's how we envision ourselves in the future years. So it's not just only about your regular desktop system, it's a whole lot of other things as well.
All right. Thank you very much again. And before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other podcast that you use. I mean, podcast app that you use. But again, if we did say some jargon, it's going to be in the show notes in hustleshare.com. And again, if you want to be part of all our little community as well, it's going to be the Hustle Share community on Facebook. Again, Ed, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, too. Thank you much. Interesting to be doing your show. Thank you.
I appreciate it. And again, I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace. Hey, hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup. Because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes, all the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.ph payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor DragonPay is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, DragonPay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disperse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. DragonPay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit DragonPay is. DragonPay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust DragonPay.